music from John Ann Gotti. 12 minutes past the hour. It's a Tuesday morning, and we're delighted to have join us our staff biochemist, Dr. Don Clark from Creation Moments. Don is in Garden Valley, Texas, and he's sporting a new pair of headphones today. I like them, Don.
Good.
Very nice. Yeah.
We'll see how they work out.
Well, they sound good, too, so he's got one of those microphones. He's professionalizing his little studio down there. So in addition to a vigneron and a vintner, he is now an IT kind of guy.
We'll see if we get into the sound technician and all this other stuff.
Yeah,
we'll
have to get you an engineer down.
There's not much I can do with these headphones except set the volume, I think.
Okay. Well, it's a great mystery. Those gaming, was it a gaming headset? Is that what they called it when you picked it out?
No, it didn't say anything about gaming.
It sounds better than most of the gaming headsets do.
Yeah, it's a Koss. It's a Koss headphones and headset.
It's good brand. So. Good brand. David's here too, and we've got lots to talk about. Mainly, a lot of times we talk about wine to kind of warm things up here, but today we can talk about one of the key ingredients in wine, which is water. And it turns out there are a couple of different articles we're talking about, and again, we will link to these once we post the podcast on our website. But there's a lot of water in places you wouldn't expect to find it. And we've got an article from the Institute of Creation Research that talks about water deep within one of the moons around Saturn that is coming out of that moon in the form of a geyser. And there's also, now this is the story that was in the news the past couple of weeks here, the European probe that landed on the comet. They were in proximity to the comet for some time and doing various scientific measurements, among which was determining how fast water was escaping from this comet. What did they find out, and what significance does it have for us, Don?
Well, it's very interesting. It's very puzzling for them because they have a different model, of course, for the solar system and the universe than we creationists do. But what they found is that, just as you described, that the water vapor was coming off of this meteorite, actually, that was floating by. And the rate at which it was coming off, it should have depleted all of its water millions and millions of years ago.
It says 6,000 gallons per day are streaming off this comet or a meteorite, and assuming it was made entirely of ice, it would melt into space after only a few hundred thousand years, it says. But no, they say it's 4.5 billion years old. How to explain this, Don?
Well, you can't. I mean, either you say, well, you know, the rate was a lot slower, you know, back then, and then for some reason it's just speeding up, and we can probably blame it on global warming.
Why not? Yeah.
But they can't. So it's a puzzlement. Either the comet just kind of appeared into our solar system and was recently formed, or maybe the solar system and our universe isn't as old as they think. Now, the other interesting thing about both of these articles, actually, is the fact that there's a lot of water out there. Mm. We even discussed on this program, I don't know how long ago, but it was probably in the summer, about the discovery that the Earth has at least two times as much water under the mantle as it does on the surface of the Earth.
Now, when you say under the mantle, how deep is that water then? Are we talking about water tables and aquifers or deeper than that?
No, deeper than that. This water appears to be bound up with different types of minerals, so they think. I mean, how can you measure 250 to 400 feet, you know, down and get a clear picture? Mm-hmm. That's what they discovered was, hey, you know, our planet is chock full of water. Well, it's kind of interesting because if you go back to Genesis, especially Genesis chapter 1, and when God talks about separating the waters from above the firmament and from below the firmament, and even before that, when in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, it says God's Spirit hovered over the face of the waters. Now, was everything water at one point in time? I mean, did God start this whole thing with water? Or, you know, was the description of water in that particular verse something different? Well, you know, there's no way of knowing until after we get to the other side of, get into heaven to ask mm-hmm. Ask Jesus that question. But it is interesting that a lot of calculations that you can do regarding the different types of planets that we have, and for example, we also talked about the magnetic field around the Earth, mm-hmm. The electromagnetic field that we have around the Earth, and that it has been decreasing. It's been degenerating ever since the start of the universe and start of the solar system and our planet. And that degeneration, calculates to about anywhere between 6 to 10,000 years. Electromagnetic field can only be explained if you take into account that there was water, mm-hmm. that the planet was mostly water, and those types of calculations have been done for other planets, and you get the right answer if you assume that the planet is mostly water. It appears that God is maybe even had this time in mind when he put those verses in Scripture to help us figure out, you know, how he put mm-hmm. the universe together, how he put the solar system together. So it's it really is quite interesting that everywhere we look, we seem to find moons and planets and comets with more water than they should have, especially if this whole universe or the whole solar system is 4.5 billion years old, as the traditional thinking
would suggest. At ICR, the Institute of Creation Research, I'll just read a paragraph to you. It says, when discovered about 10 years ago, a remarkable plume of water ice, ejected from Enceladus, which is an icy moon in Saturn's E-ring, left secular notions of the moon's origin up in the air. Detailed inspection of Enceladus now shows not just one, but 101 geysers shooting ice particles into space through four fissures that cut across a basin in the South Pole region. Now, if these geysers formed billions of years ago, as secular origin models insist, then small solar system bodies should be old, cold, and dead. That is geologically, magnetically, and otherwise completely inactive. Enceladus already broke this cold mold once with its towering water ice plume, and then a second time when close measurements revealed more heat than expected. So the universe is still full of surprises for us, isn't it? We're a long way from figuring this thing out.
Well, and that's, as they suggested, I mean, you know, this particular moon, you know, isn't that large, and so for it to still have heat in it to even, you know, generate geysers, because obviously something under the surface has to be hot mm-hmm. in order for you to get a geyser.
It creates pressure, and that blows the water out through fissures and openings, yeah.
So even the residual heat, not the residual heat, there's got to be a lot of heat that this moon of Saturn is spewing out. Is a mystery. If you think that, you know, the solar system and the universe is indeed as old as they think it is. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the universe is, they think, is almost 13.7, 13.8 billion years old, with the, as I said before, the solar system being about 4.5 billion years old. Mm-hmm. Well, none of this fits that model.
So we're showing signs of being a much younger universe, and, of course, the secular world of science is going to have to do some head-scratching and figure out how to explain that now. You gave us an explanation of what is we read in Genesis some time ago about also a kind of a shell, another layer of either ice or water that surrounded the earth as shortly after its creation, and that in fact accommodated a uniform weather pattern between the North and South Poles that explained a lot of the things like tropical plants growing up in and being consumed by mastodons in the Arctic and so forth. So did that water stay with us? How'd that work?
Well, if indeed there was an ice canopy around around the Earth, you got a couple of things going on. Of course, if there was one before the flood, then and if for some reason that ice canopy broke, then all that water came, you know, raining down, if you will, that could explain where the 40 days and 40 nights of all the water came from. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, some people just think it was a high amount of water in the atmosphere without having rain. The other thing that's going on, of course, at the time of the flood, is that your supercontinent is beginning to crack up and you know, split apart into the continents that we have today, including Antarctica and Arctica. So all of that was one appeared to be one landmass. And we can know that by looking at the, interestingly enough, the strata that is on the two continents. Let's say, you know, if you take the Atlantic Ocean and you're looking at Americas and you're looking at Europe, and you look at the strata that is on those two continents, and you say, hey, you know, these were once connected at some point in time. Mm-hmm. And of course, you can take cores, you know, earth samples, drilling cores, and look at them and come to the same conclusion. So the fact that it looks like everything was kind of glued together in what, you know, the supercontinent was called Pangaea, you know, at one point in time, and a fairly uniform climate and atmosphere that was around,
possibly, you know, around, due to that ice shell that encased the Earth, possibly,
and possibly, yeah, mm-hmm. possibly the ice shell, which helped perhaps keep the atmosphere. There's some indication that the atmosphere was actually not one atmosphere, but it was actually something like 2.2 atmospheres mm-hmm. Before the flood. And
now, what do you mean by that? Two different densities, two different substances.
No, the pressure was higher.
Pressure. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, the atmospheric pressure was a little more than twice what it was today, which would have meant that there was a lot more oxygen, mm-hmm. and that such things as large pterodactyls could fly. Mm-hmm. If you know, aerodynamically, a pterodactyl as large as we've found them wouldn't be able to fly today, mm-hmm. because there's not enough air. Well, there's not enough air pressure.
I never thought of that before. So, but a denser atmosphere might help explain that. Yeah.
So if the whole environment, as you know, we would certainly gather from Genesis, if the whole environment was much more conducive to life, then having something like an ice canopy to kind of encapsulate mm-hmm. the whole Earth and you know, protect it from the outside gamma rays and all kinds of other rays that are coming being bombarded at the planet would be much more beneficial for life.
Which are long-term detrimental to us, aren't they? All those all that radiation coming from space over a long term denigrates us, doesn't it? Not, I don't know, that's the wrong word. Deteriorates us. It has adverse consequences.
Well, it does, and if you, you know, even a cursory look at the ages of the patriarchs, if you will, after the flood, you can see that their ages degrade, you know, from about 930, which is the average before the flood, to 500 for Shem, for example, and then it drops very rapidly after that. To when you get to Moses, 120 years, and then at some point in time, the Bible says, well, your lifespan's going to be 70 or 80 if you are righteous. Mm-hmm. So if you're not righteous, it'll be 70, but if you're righteous, then it'll be 80. Well, of course, we've got people living longer than 80, today.
Some cranky old people, too.
Yeah, and we have, we have some even approaching 120, mm-hmm. but they're not approaching 930 years. Yeah, that's sure.
So it's interesting how you can look at how Genesis describes things happening, and when you, one, accept it literally, and that is, don't put it into the category of folklore or legend, but think of it as real events, and then look beneath the surface of that and apply some science, it all makes sense. It all comes together. It forms a logical explanation for why we are the way we are today in so many aspects.
Well, it does, and even bringing it back down to, you know, this moon that's, you know, orbiting around Saturn, for mm-hmm. example, it, you know, if the universe and the solar system are less than, 10,000 years old, this is not a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is what we would expect to see. We would expect to see planetary bodies, for example, that still have the appearance and still have the energy of, you know, a young universe.
Hmm. Now, I've been told, I've read maybe, that the amount of water on the Earth is constant, whatever it happens to be. The water itself does not escape from the Earth, but it recycles. It evaporates and rains and runs back into the oceans, and then evaporates and rains and runs back into the oceans. How do we account for this water in minerals in the Earth's mantle? I mean, it's chemically now, you're a biochemist. How do you get water in a rock?
Oh, well, that's there are many many salts, for example, that are hydrates. Mm-hmm. And what that means, I mean, hydra meaning water, mm-hmm. so hydrates meaning that the mineral is actually hydrated. And water is attracted to it, and it binds water. Calcium sulfates, for example, you can have various hydrates, magnesium sulfates, you can have various hydrates of magnesium sulfates. Mm-hmm. They're used as desiccants. If you drive all the water off by heating them up for a long period of time, then you can use them as desiccants because, mm-hmm. you know, it attracts water and it'll pull water out of the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a lot of minerals like that, and there's no reason why we shouldn't believe that there aren't minerals like that under the Earth's surface, then those minerals would be very efficient at binding water and holding water.
Now, is that like those little silica gel things we see? Is that a similar chemical effect?
I mean,
so
those,
it draws water out but doesn't get wet.
Right, exactly. I mean, it'll eventually, if you leave it out for a long period of time, mm-hmm. it'll eventually, you'll have a puddle of water.
Okay.
But,
okay.
But for the most part, that's the type of, the same type of chemistry is going on. Mm-hmm. The silica gel, has, I don't know exactly what it has in it. Let's say it's got calcium or magnesium sulfate, or maybe the silica itself is sulfated. And that pulls in the water from the environment that it's in.
Okay. So is the Earth then like a sponge?
Well, you could say that's one analogy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the problem with having all of this water inside the Earth is that it gives you a different model for how it actually formed in the beginning. Hmm. And if you look at it from an evolutionary point of view, you cannot explain it. It just, that's just not the model. I mean, you know, you just can't explain all the water that's there. If mm-hmm. you look at it from a creation point of view, God said he brought the waters together into one place, and you know, the dry land appeared.
So the existence and the location and the quantity of water really are important clues as to the age of the universe.
Well, it helps. It mm-hmm. all helps to build this this model. And there's more evidence, obviously. I mean, not obviously. If it was obvious, people would believe it. But there's more. Mm-hmm. You know, there's more evidence if you choose to look in the right places. There's more evidence for the creation model than there is for evolution. Mm-hmm. I mean, this. You look around the universe. You look even. You know, the comets, and you know, who would have thought you would have a moon orbiting you know, Saturn, and it's got geysers on it.
Yeah,
and
a lot of kind of amazing to me. Yeah, water yeah. geysers, like old, yeah. old Faithful there. Yeah,
yeah, and Old Faithful, many Old Faithfuls, and you know, that it just, you know, blows the mind, I'm sure, of the folks on the evolutionary cosmic evolution you know, point of view. How did this all, you know, happen? Because it mm-hmm. should have been, you know, it should have been burnt up. The water shouldn't have even been there in the first place. But by the fact that the water is there, and by the fact that the water is inside our planet, shows us that our planet didn't start off as a hot ball, as evolution would have said. They would say, well, you know, we had the sun, and then the sun spewed out, or, you know, this molten material, or the sun captured the molten material from another explosion nearby, and that's how we got our planets. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that model just doesn't hold, because there's way too much water there.
Except that side of science seldom gets revealed in the light of day. And we have organizations such as the Institute of Creation Research to thank for it, Creation Moments to thank for it. You do have access to that kind of scientific evidence and examination. And in terms of the Institute of Creation Research, their website is icr.org. And they're chock full of scientific articles, not polemics, not propaganda. Occasionally you find some opinion pieces there, but it has to do with a core of good science that says the Earth is young, and it suggests that Genesis had it right the first time. And the more you look at those things, the more convinced you become. But I guess my point is, you don't, unless you go to those places, you don't ever hear about this. It's not like the mainstream media picks it up and hoots about it.
Well, no, because, you know, there's an agenda there, and we're trying to indoctrinate our kids to say that there is no God. Mm-hmm. And when you have evidence that says contrary to that, and that the evidence for a loving God is all around us, mm-hmm. and everything that we look at, you know, points to him, you know, it's you kind of want to not... you know, give that evidence if you are, you know, mm-hmm. Obviously believing not that there is no God. So,
and it's interesting when you get into conversations, either blog sites where there are commenters, or just even discussions, how often heat rises to the top, and you start defending your position and hurling, you know, diminishing the other argument. You start calling names, you start ridiculing, instead of dealing with the science as it exists. And a rational approach to that science, to the evidence, and a fair examination of that evidence. It's so hard to find that. So I'm grateful for places like Institute of Creation Research and Creation Moments. By the way, you can link to creationmoments.com from our website at Broken Road Radio. You may be right there this morning. Over on the right-hand side of the webpage, there's a Creation Moments link, and it'll take you to a wealth of resources, videos and written articles and evidence for the young Earth creationist viewpoint. And I'm not saying, well, you should run out and believe that, but you need to take a look at it. You owe it to yourself to look at both sides of the discussion. And so we're grateful for that, and for Don's affiliation with Creation Moments. Don, it's been a pleasure.
Well, as always, it's been fun, and it's We always get into, you know, some interesting conversations on this program.
And once again, we made it impossible for David to get in a word edgewise. So he's been there.
Oh, you mean you wanted me to talk too?
He's listening with rapt attention.
Not just pay attention?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it didn't seem like there was. And, you know, there really wasn't anything I was going to add to the conversation today. If there was, I was going to butt in. The one thing that I would add at the end that really doesn't have a great deal to do with water, but it, kind of like politics, we invest in our own particular theories or the ways of that we may or may not have developed on our own, and it's almost like we take anything that disagrees with that as a direct affront. Mm-hmm. That it becomes very personal, that even this suggestion that we look at evidence, period. Mm-hmm. Not other evidence, not new evidence, not evidence that's never been looked at before, but it's almost you know, those people that hold other beliefs, and they are beliefs, they're not based on anything beyond just, well, this is what Grandpa told me.
Yeah, there's a few observable facts strung together with a whole lot of huge assumptions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And evolution is a case in point. It's not proven. It's a theory. It's faith. It's almost a religion.
Mm-hmm. And it is a religion.
It is a religion, yeah.
And that's the reason why you get so animate arguments mm-hmm. and from people is because it's a belief system, mm-hmm. and you're going at the core of their belief. So when you challenge it.
And when you challenge it, and the most articulate response you get is, oh, yeah, so's your old man. You know, it kind of kills the argument right there. So, yeah. Don, as always, we're grateful to have you with us. And thank you so much. How are things in Texas? Pleasant?
Well, yeah. They are getting colder. Okay. We had some, a couple of nights ago, we had a little bit of snow flurries because mm-hmm. it was kind of drizzling all day.
Congratulations, Aaron Oder. Enough
that we had a little snow flurries and we had some snow on the ground.
Well, see, that's good stuff. That's good stuff.
That's good stuff, but it's all evaporated. It's all melted now. So.
Well, that's what brought us in droves to East Dakota, you know, snow and cold. That's why we're here.
Sure. Oh, that's why we're here.
Yeah. You needed to, the cross-country skiing was just phenomenal.
Cross-country skiing was just no good.
It was short. Yeah.
It's terrible. Yeah. Just awful.
And you wanted to invent the snowmobile, so.
That's true. We did that, too. Don, have a terrific week. We'll talk to you next Tuesday, okay?
Okay. Very good.
Bye-bye.
See you, Don.
Bye.